Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave Solomon. It is an absolute blast on the show today. Holy cow, I can't even tell you. This is going to be really relaxing for me for 3 hours. We have had a major weekend here in the Baltimore, D.C. area. A number of things, very exciting, all of them. And now we're just going to relax. We've got coming up for you a little bit later on, Lynn Fidmont, who says hello to our guest at the top of the show. And I am so pleased to be able to give you this gentleman who has been around, if you can believe this, about 26 years for the Rippingtons. This is one of those guys who is a Renaissance man, actually, I would say. Composer, bandleader, producer, arranger, multi-instrumentalist, multi-genres. He's a man for all seasons. He is the founder of the Rippingtons, Russ Freeman. Russ, hello!
Trish, hey, how are you?
I'm just tickled as all get out. I am so excited because of Built to Last. You have no idea.
Well, it's amazing the reaction we've had from our fans. I'm stunned by it because when
really?
I was writing it, I thought this is a real left turn. But, you know, in the back of my mind, I thought our fans have been so supportive, and many of them have been with us since the beginning. They're incredibly loyal, and, you know, I love our fans. So I thought, hey, the ones that get it are really going to enjoy the record.
Oh, Russ, honestly, in listening to the project, I was just stunned because, you know, those of us who are familiar with the Rippingtons' work, certainly we shouldn't be surprised by anything because actually your work and the Rippingtons as a whole has been so adventurous. But this particular project, I was thinking of alphabetizing because these were the first words that came to mind, so bear with me. Ambitious, big, church-filled, diamond-in-her-shoes, exploratory, 21st century, joyful, hopeful, hybrid jazz.
Wow. You're a poet.
But you are, and that's what it made me feel. I wanted to jump out of my chair because it was one of the songs that really struck me was American Panorama, and it just was so indicative of the changing forces in America and how if we can get past hurdles, here is this vista of hope right in front of us.
You know, you are something else, Trish. It's fantastic.
Well,
for seeing that.
You know, it's just beautiful. And how did you come to this point? I mean, what was going through your head for this particular album?
Well, a lot of things. A large part of the time, I was just kind of amazed that I had the opportunity to make the record. That 26 years later, we'd still have fans that love the music. And I never forget that when I sit down to write. I really believe it's all for the fans. But in particular on this album, I was really thinking back to the 25-year-old kid who started the band. And I was thinking the kind of choices that I was making on the CD would have been unimaginable to that kid. And I just had such a fun time during the whole process thinking about how far the band has come, how we've changed. And just the process itself has been a pure enjoyment.
The absolute transition from back in 1986, Moonlighting, my gosh, we go back that far. It's a lifetime ago. My son was born in 1992, and he's 20.
you know, mentioning that, a lot of people in their 20s come up to us and say we're diehard fans, and our parents – you know, we've listened all our lives. And I thought at first when they started saying that, I think, well, poor kid, you know, you had no choice. But they're truly fans. It's really, we're in the second generation of fans now.
Isn't that something?
It's really fun to see that. You know, even kids that are into like rock and roll or whatever is happening musically, to have them, to see them enjoy the music, it's a real thrill for a composer, I tell you.
And actually, it's funny that you should say that because I've been posting all over the place about the fact that you're going to visit today. And one of the gentlemen who really has done a number in contemporary jazz recently that I've come to know. He has been on the show, is Scott Allman, amazing keyboard player, and he heard that you were going to be on the show, and he said this. He said you are possibly his favorite jazz artist, a brilliant composer, and then he had to write more to me. He said, I would have to say my favorite of his is Deep Powder, the number two track from Black Diamond, exquisite and restrained, which is hard to do.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to see, to hear articulate people. I mean, even criticisms are interesting to me, to see how people relate to the music, because everyone's got their own prism that they put through the music. So it's really, it's fascinating to see.
And it's interesting that you you are so multifaceted. I took a look at some of your photography, and I was taken with the pictures of Greece. Sometimes the key to a peaceful artist, and I consider you to be one of the more serene beings that walks the planet, just because of the positivity of your music and the way these stories are captured for us instrumentally. Do you think that it helps that you are so in love with life that you see other elements come into your music more than the music? Do you see pictures in your head all the time?
It's funny that you mention that, because I feel that art and music are so closely related. And I draw a lot of parallels a lot of times, particularly, you know, when we talk about texture in music. And I really relate it to texture and art and colors. And I really feel like, you know, I'm taking a palette of colors. And in particular, on Built to Last, it's just a wider palette. And I did that on purpose. I really wanted to go further than just the quintet that we're known as being, and delve into all these other rich colors and textures and dynamic range that I've been longing to do for all these years.
And it's so amazing. I mean, people are going to be tripping if they're not familiar with Built to Last. It's so awesome that you have taken the title and you have nurtured that three times on the CD with a classical guitar reprise, with an orchestra, which is so rich. You did the same with Black Oak, and then you had another song that starts the CD and ends the CD. It's just honestly, Russ, it's like this infused jazz opera.
I was talking to a longtime fan just a couple of days ago, and she told me, you know, I've been playing in this band for many years, and it was a woodwind band, a really big one, beautiful, and she plays the flute. So I always relate this, that our fans themselves have talent. I mean, I think everyone has talent. It's just a matter of if you develop it, if you pursue it. So I meet so many adults that I really feel have this locked up inside them. Everyone has a need to be creative and to do these things.
How did you know that you had this particular gift? What was it that sparked in you early on where you had the aha moment where you didn't want to do anything else but focus on these journeys in your mind that had to be transformed musically?
I was really lucky, Trish, because my dad was himself a very pretty accomplished amateur musician. He played guitar and piano, and he had us listen to everything from Bach to Beethoven to the Rolling Stones to the Beatles, to Creedence Clearwater. We listened to everything. And he wanted, his dream was to have the four kids be like a string quartet. So my sister played the cello and I played the viola. We were just little kids. So I always grew up with a love of these stringed instruments. And when I was only about 10 years old, he became friends with some very accomplished studio musicians in Nashville. And they would drag me to these sessions. So I knew by 12 that I really wanted to do this. He actually got me one of the first multi-track tape recorders. I remember this. He used it in his scientific work. So I was already doing like multi-track recordings when I was 12 years old.
Wow. Isn't that something? And my gosh, what a blessing to have a dad like that who made it a point that you were immersed in different kinds of music. That's just such a torch
absolutely
to pass on.
Absolutely, and I think the secret is the diversity of music. And I'm reminded today that I think most people have a really wide range of musical taste. It's not just one thing. I mean, in the industry, we put things in boxes and labels, and we're very careful to say, well, that's, so you know, that's contemporary whatever, or that's rock or pop or whatever. But people's taste is wide. I mean, they like opera, they like country, they like everything. So that's
more
interesting.
You are right. And this is a topic for conversation so many times. Actually, I think that is a particular American annoyance. We insist on the boxes, whereas in Europe, they're not so focused on that. And that's why I wanted to make sure the show was called Hybrid Jazz, because, you know, I absolutely love John Coltrane, and I love Miles Davis. And if you were to tell them, oh, do you know that you're considered a straight-ahead jazz in 2012, they would bark at you.
It's so ironic that Miles did everything in his power to buck whatever trend was happening in his lifetime at that time. And
That's exactly right.
He's like the benchmark of something he was trying to purposefully, you know,
avoid.
Overcome.
Right, right. And it just is so amazing. And maybe you agree with this or not, but gosh, some folks really chafe at this notion. But though, because of the so-called, and I say that because I'm not necessarily the world's biggest fan, although people make money on smooth jazz. I did for a while, too, because I was in that radio. But because those stations have gone away, it just seems like artists have been forced to recreate or reimagine or reinvent a genre that needs to express itself in new and refreshing ways, not only for the people that already loved it, but for those kids coming up who are just getting a taste of it.
Well, yeah, what you're really referring to, I think, is just the life cycle of these formats. And really what happens is, and you can see it from the beginning, smooth jazz actually was not ever called smooth jazz. That was a moniker that came 10 years later. But the format, I guess back then it was like a Quiet Storm hybrid. And
yeah,
the Quiet Storm by itself was really interesting. They played all sorts of things. So out of the Quiet Storm, suddenly they replaced this classic rock, and overnight the format was born. And so you had this very wide range. There was no tight playlist. They would play all sorts of cool things. And then gradually over the years, they had a sound, and then they would have their core artists. And then corporate decisions were made to try to tighten playlists, to sell more advertising. And then you just gradually had this watering down of content over, 10, 15 years. So now what I'm referring to is the cycle that you say now we have to break out of. It's very typical. It's just the same thing kind of happens over and over.
And I love the feel of what I perceive, Russ, as a renaissance. I really do love jazz. There's all sorts of things I've been involved in, country music disc jockey for a while, rock disc jockey for a while. So having been immersed in Motown at a young age, because I'm a few years older than you, and having been immersed in that early rock scene, I love jazz because some of these folks have come over and have contributed really widely to the creativity that I'm hearing now. How do you perceive you and the Rippingtons? What is your place in the world as far as music is concerned?
Really, that's a fantastic question, Trish. And what I would say is we have probably been, or our contribution would be to take styles that have not been mixed together before and to mix them. I would say that would be the simplest synopsis of what the Rippingtons are. We're a hybrid, I guess that's your word, right? The hybrid jazz. But we've combined many, many styles over the years purposefully. And I think that's the intersection of these things is where music is really interesting. And these days, like you say, now we're opening up into like new classical. We've had world music, a lot of R&B and pop influences, a lot of rock influences in the Rippingtons. We've combined a lot of different things.
And it's so beautiful to see one of the folks that's coming to, and I know you're coming to Ramshead on Thursday. Yay!
Rams really, has a great venue. It's fabulous.
Oh, my gosh. Isn't it awesome? And, you know, that's considered to be, with seating that's just under 500, the most awesome under 500-seater club in America.
You know, there's something about that crowd. They're just so enthusiastic, such great people there. Never fails to be a fun place to play.
Yeah, it really is. And one of the folks that's following you in the next few days is Robert Glasper, who is another creative type like you, a visionary, because he is insistent on being able to immerse hip-hop with jazz. And it's just come out to be this fluid, just breath of fresh air, and that's what I was reminded of when I heard Built to Last. My God, every track, and I wrote every track down because I just wanted to have those memories of hearing it 2-3 times pop in my head. When I heard Route 66, for example, I went, get out, because it is so big. It's so larger than life. And then follow that with We Make a New World and Cougars and Gigolos. Now, I have that along with American Panorama, so you can figure out what folks you want folks to hear at this point. But honestly, Fool's Gold, Monument, Monolith, holy cow, where did that come from? Everything is like this different curve in the road where you're going, hold on, baby, hold on. We don't know where we're going to go, but it's pretty cool.
by about the middle of the CD, it was purposeful. I felt like, well, we're breaking every rule that we've ever established in the band. Let's just break everyone we can imagine. And that's kind of how it happened.
And it's just so enriching. I was listening to, I had Harvey Mason on last week, so of course we were listening to Foreplay. And between what they're doing and this new Rippington's masterpiece, it's like diving into the holiday season early. It's getting this feel of something that is in the air about renewal and hope, and maybe if we just hang on tighter, this little paradise is going to reveal itself. That's what I get from the album, Russ.
So you're getting a very positive vibe from it. That's great. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, you're so eloquent in your description of it. It's a pleasure to hear your thoughts on it.
Well, you know what? When there's poetry involved, and a lot of the time, you know, it's music, and some people who are in the business perceive of it as a business. And honestly, that's what you hear in their music, is business, and not necessarily art. So when you hear art, it just becomes, it's like me, I start to speed. I mean, I'm just having coffee here, but you just get excited about the enormity of the task. How long did it take you to put Built to Last together?
It took a long time. I really, really thought hard about it. I took about a year to make it. And I'm glad. I mean, it was a real learning curve to try to figure out how I wanted to integrate all these different musical elements together. But it was the most rewarding album we've done with the Rips, by far.
Really? That's something significant to say, Russ.
Well, I didn't want to just have it be another piece of catalog. It was a really important moment for the Rips. I never even thought we would get to 25 years. It was never in my mind to have a trajectory like that.
Right.
And I guess people are surprised. I mean, the way I've always felt like every album's the last album. You've got to say what you have to say and really mean it. And I've always felt that way about the Rips. I never knew whether we'd get another opportunity. I know it sounds really crazy to say that, but that's how I view it. You know, you have to put yourself and put everything into it. So it was very important to me that this album not sound like any other record.
And honestly, you seem to live your life this way. It has to be authentic. And the proof is in the pudding, because Built to Last is number one at iTunes, and it debuted number one on Billboard, correct?
Well, we're talking about this, and your excitement about it is simply that it seems refreshing and different. And I think that's a huge part of the success of this CD, is because it's not something that anyone else is doing.
Right.
And I didn't really think about that when I was making it. I was just focused like a laser on getting, you know, the vision that I had in a certain way, but I didn't really think overall about how people would respond to it. And now I'm seeing that its success is kind of because it is different.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And here's an interesting analogy. I've made this once, and I'll make it again. Having been involved in country music for so many years, Charlie Pride was one of those stories that was the most fascinating, not only because he was an African-American in country music when people didn't expect to see someone of color singing country music, but Kiss an Angel Good Morning was a huge song. He did not have in mind for it to be a huge hit. He just wanted to make an authentic song that people felt endeared to. They felt drawn to the story about it. And honestly, that's how I feel about you. You've always set this path that is a loner path that people wanted to follow because you heard this music in your head. You wanted to make great music, and you didn't have any formula to follow. It was all a creative process that just opened these doors for people that weren't there before you. So thank you for all of us, from all of us.
What's interesting about you, Trish, is that you have this mentality that crosses these genres because of your experience in all these different fields of music. It's very rare that you have this kind of perception. So it's nice to hear. Thanks.
Well, thank you. And I think that the audience will want to thank both of us because we need to play something. So you tell me. I mean, there was just so many to pick from, and I finally said, Trish, come on, just pick two.
Oh, I don't know. It's funny. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I'm so struck and so pleased to hear about the success of Cougars and Gigolos so far.
Now, that's a stunner. I would have lost every bet on that one.
Well,
but I'll tell you what. I will tell you
this
quick story about that that song. You'll have to ask my wife about the title, but I did have a vision of this one particular venue in mind. And the people get up and dance there. They love the music. They get up and dance. So we played a concert there, and lo and behold, I mean, listen, it was warm outside. It's an outdoor, beautiful place. And the people were dancing to that tune. It's a vision I always had for that song. So it worked.
Well, and you know, it is very prone to imagery because
Can you imagine that guy? I mean, it's a top 10 song. It's fantastic. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And if there are a couple of different types to go together, they would be Cougars and Gigolos. Well, let's play it. It's such a wonderfully energetic and just happy. It's just a real happy tune, and we need to hear happy Russ Freeman.
Awesome.
So let's do it. This is from the Rippingtons' Built to Last brand-new project, Cougars and Gigolos, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy.
Thank you.
Now, talk about being able to create a visual. Why do I think of Uma Thurman dancing in a David Lynch movie when I hear that song?
You should do like jazz poetry, Trish. This is just performance art.
God bless you. Cougars and Gigolos, Built to Last, the new Rippingtons project. Rippingtons.com for more information. This is so awesome. Russ Freeman, honest to gosh, the whole album is just scintillating, and I'm so thankful that you continue to follow your own muse. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
It's just incredible. And we'll see you Thursday, by the way. We're bringing a little group, you know.
Oh, definitely. Bring
it. And what is your hope now with Built to Last? I'm going to let you go in a minute. What do you want to see, or what would be a hope for you that people will realize with this CD or beyond?
I think a success for this would be if people got excited about the orchestral instrumentation, get excited about the real instruments and the real orchestra. And, of course, to have the band perform with some orchestras is also a huge goal of mine.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, especially when it comes to something like Black Oak from the CD. Oh, my God.
Right.
That was
breathtaking.
Yeah,
that's what I'm looking towards doing. I think that would be a really cool intersection there.
Oh, well, you know what? I'm just going to lift that little prayer up to heaven that that's going to happen, because it's going to spin some people's heads, and people need to be renewed with this energy that you have. So thank you for spending time with us. I really appreciate you, Russ.
Thank you, Trish. I look forward to seeing you Thursday.
Okay, we'll do it. Yes. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You too. That was lovely. We knew we had 30 minutes, and hopefully we did a good thing. And we've got another guest on the line. Now, before we get to this guest, I just want to say thank you to Russ Freeman again. Just a wonderful project. Oh, my gosh. When I heard Built to Last, I was just shaking my head. It was another zone to be in, and I fully encourage you to go out and get it. We have a situation that happened at the beginning of the show with the chat room. So we're going to try to see, before we get to the next call, to see whether that's okay. And it looks like things are okay. Yay! It's okay. We're all set to go. And hopefully, I know that there was a lot of folks buzzing about Russ. We have a very full show. Russ Freeman started the show, and I'm very grateful. And now we've got Gregory Tompkins, who is, besides the fact that he's my buddy and quite the political aficionado on Facebook, he is going to be talking about something that's so important, because the Baltimore Jazz Education Project is his baby. Besides being a saxophonist and a teacher and a mentor, he heads this beautiful scenario up, and he is going to have a fundraiser this coming week, and I want to make sure you get to know him. You heard him before on the show. He was a guest some months back, but we have him again. Hi, Shook.
Hey, how you doing, Trish?
I'm better now. I'm just awash in all this great music, and we're going to hear something from you. Thank you very much for the little send that you did a while ago.
I'm glad that got through. I'm not the most technically, aware person, but we try.
Well, no, it did come through. Now, whether we'll be able to get what you sent on the air or not, I'm trying for one. Hopefully I'll get to that, but at least we have a song to indicate the kind of feel that people are going to be hearing and vibing to on Saturday. You want to explain what this amazing project is all about, sir, please?
Yes, certainly. Well, I guess the disc that you have is some of the stuff that I've done with Lafayette. But what we're going to be really doing on Saturday is more of a straight-ahead group with Carl Flippiak, Lafayette Gilchrist, Robert Shaid, and Blake Meister.
Oh,
and
fabulous.
We're going to back, We're going to back some of the students from the Baltimore Jazz Education Project, which is a foundation that I'm the musical director of. And that won't be the only group that plays. We have a group of elementary and middle school youngsters that are quite sharp, and they're called the Flat Five Quintet. And
oh, wow.
I'm telling you, once they come on stage, people are just going to melt. They're really great. So they're going to do three songs, and then my saxophone quartet will play a few, and then we'll bring the jazz group out.
Well, I brought my son to the show last year, and we both enjoyed it so much, because when you see young people so excited about jazz and being able to play and guided along by those who care so much, that even if they're not necessarily great in the beginning, they don't know that, because the encouragement and the support they get makes them feel like a million bucks. So then they flourish. It's wonderful to see.
Well, you know, people tend to learn better if you're kind of giving them the carrot instead of the stick.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really about the positivity of the situation. And the Baltimore Jazz Education Foundation, along with the young people that we've helped out, we've just been incredibly fortunate, because this is something that started out very small, which means that Greg and Sally Poling, they're the founders of this program. And originally they put this thing together and they said, hey, we want you to lead it. We'll put $10,000 in a year. And basically what we were thinking was we'd buy some saxophones and, you know, I'd teach lessons to kids for free, you know? So they'd have the free saxophone and the free lessons, you know?
You're so good.
And
oh.
We thought that's what it was going to be. But seriously, before we even got out the gate, the Herbert Behrman Foundation heard about us and just gave us a check for $11,000
oh,
right off
God.
The bat. So in 5 years, we've raised $100,000, and we've been frugal with it. So, you know, basically what we're trying to do is get the instruments and the knowledge directly to the kids without a lot of middleman type of thing. And the fundraiser concert, yes, it is a fundraiser concert, but more importantly, we get these young people out on the big stage, like Towson Fine Arts Concert Hall stage. That's the main concert hall stage. That's where all the professional and classical jazz performers coming out of Towson University perform at. And
beautiful,
so many people have played on that stage, you know, major stars and whatnot. So, you know, we're getting these kids out doing this. And, you know, I mean, to be somebody that's 15 or 16 years old and you're playing in a band with Carl Filipiak or Lafayette Gilchrist, it's really something, and it really does something for them. And Chris Young, who will be playing with us, is a graduate of our program, and he won a full tuition scholarship to Towson University for jazz saxophone. So he's now in his sophomore year. So that's, you know, we're meeting our goals. We're trying to help people, especially if they want to go to college and are looking at going to college for music. If anybody's ever looked at what music school really costs a year, it's like 40, 50 grand a year.
Crazy.
You know, if they're going to go to a conservatory, and then I don't want to talk about what gigs are really, really like when you're trying to start off. It's even hard to get, you know, just a little gig on the weekend. So, you know, I just thought that this would be a good way to help young people into this thing without getting bogged down and completely discouraged and throwing the towel away. And, you know, but we also help kids that just want to learn. You know, and that's a great thing. Learn about this great art of our country.
Well, there are a couple of things to say in response to you. First of all, I absolutely love Robert Shahid and Carl Filipiak and Lafayette Gilchrist, but you, sir, Gregory Tompkins, have played with the Almighty Senators, have played with the Persuaders. You have been called by the Baltimore Sun, one of the premier tenor saxophonists, not only in this region, but period. So they're probably so thrilled to be playing with you, especially since you spend so much time mentoring these kids. This is so important, Greg. You know, we talk about this all the time with jazz education for our kids. if it wasn't for projects like this, what would these kids do? We've got to have more of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I was the same way coming up. I mean, I went to I studied with Ron Deal, who was one of the great lead outfield players of the country who played in the Navy Commodores. He used to let me come in and sit in at the UMBC Jazz Ensemble back in the 70s when I really, really couldn't play. He'd bring me up and I'd be, you know, squeaking out notes, whatever. And Carl Grubbs is another person I studied with,
yeah.
And he had a jazz program. I got a lot out of that, you know. And then, of course, Hank Levy, Glenn Cashman, George Garzone, hanging around Whit Williams. And that's how you get it. You get it by being around people. And you get around these people that they're high quality. They want to be the best. They want you to be the best. And, you know, at this point in my life, I'm almost 50 years old. You know, it's time to, like, start helping other people pass this thing on.
Well, I mean, you've been doing it for a while now. And actually, it's just really very cool to get the whole sense of where you're coming from as far as these kids are concerned. What you just said a little while ago says everything. People learn better with the carrot and not the stick. And if we can just pass along that kind of attitude to kids, and I'm thinking, too, Greg, of the musicianship, because my friend Anita King is going to do a benefit for the musicianship, which is what DC is doing with kids. You know, Diane Granger started
mm-hmm.
that whole effort, and they've been able to actually get in schools and have programs after school for these kids as far as jazz education is concerned. This is crucial, and I'm hoping that if things go well, cross your fingers, that we'll see a gradual re-implementation to the schools. What do you think about that?
Wow. Well, of course, I think it would be wonderful. It's really where we need to be moving. But I also see a lot more of your, you know, professional musicians really looking at this, you know, really
nice.
Getting involved, you know. So I think that's another way that it will happen. You know, it won't just be through the school system. It'll be some of the people that are outside of the school system stepping in a little bit.
And that, gosh, that might be even not preferable necessarily, but I just love the idea that those with means are helping those without them. And especially the kids who really weren't expected to have them. You know, you lay a saxophone or a trumpet or a really magical instrument for a little kid, an upright bass, in their hands, and they're transformed. Who knows who's out there who has a gift that's so monumental that they could change the face of the world? You know, how often have you run into musicians who have said, well, you know what, I just want to heal the planet. and music can do that. You know that. So if children, if they have the resources, the sky is the limit.
We live in a new world.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of technology out there. You know, I tell students it's not so much that, hey, you got to go and learn this instrument and, you know, just do the normal routine of, oh, I'll do gigs and I'll do recordings or whatever. Maybe you'll combine that with the technology some way. I don't know. You know, I mean, back in Miles Davis and Coltrane's day, that was the most advanced thing that you could do. You know, write those tunes, play that music, go out on the road. You know, now you got all this cyber stuff going on. Who knows if there'll be some breakthrough with that. And maybe that's really happening now when we're not really aware of it. It's maybe in transition. But, you know, the music remains and the love of the music and its power, and it obviously transforms, you know, people. So right now I'm just kind of sticking with that as much as I possibly can.
I completely understand. And I'm going to give folks a little taste, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be tricky, but I'll really explain the trick. I am going to play Lafayette Gilchrist and the New Volcanoes towards the Shining Path, because that's what I already had in the system. And since I just got what the newer project in my hot hands, I am going to find Unscripted from what you sent to me and play that after our interview is over. Is that cool by you?
Oh, that sounds great.
Okay, cool. Gregory Tompkins is on the phone with me, and he is considered to be one of the masters as far as tenor saxophone is concerned in this huge region. And this amazing Baltimore Jazz Education Project is really getting buzz, and we're going to have the fundraiser on Saturday, right? The 6th?
Yes, Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at the Fine Arts Concert Hall. In the Center of the Arts at Towson University.
And yes, and to further clarify what Greg has said, it's more than a fundraiser, although that's the primary reason, but the music is going to be so off the chain. You're going to see some fresh musicians play, and then you're going to see some seasoned pros play. So you're going to get the best of both worlds. It's going to be happening, as the kids say.
Absolutely.
And with that, I'm going to give you a little taste of what you might be hearing, or a derivative thereof. Lafayette Gilchrist and the New Volcanoes, Gregory Tompkins was part of this, you know, Towards the Shining Path on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. see that group do its thing on stage. Oh, my God. Had the opportunity to do that in an outdoor setting. Lafayette, Gilchrist, and the New Volcanoes. Oh, my God. It's as though you're seeing God, honestly.
I don't know. It could be the other way around for some of us.
Oh, no. No, honestly, it is so amazing because whatever the chemistry of you folks have, and I know that there are different players each time, but Lafayette knows how to assemble the right kinds of cats and kittens for this, and the mix is just insane. I know that you were, like, on fire the first time you were playing with that mix, weren't you?
Yeah. Lafayette is – I'm not saying he'll have the popularity of a Duke Ellington or Count Basie, but he is definitely stepping into that role of being a great leader like that. The writing, the combination of people, I mean, he really checks people out before he gets them in the band. He knows who he wants.
Right.
He goes after them, too, you know. So, I mean, the first couple times he asked me, I wasn't really particularly interested in being in any band at that point because I was just kind of burnt out on bands. But, and he really pursued me. And, you know, basically what it came down to was he came up to me and said, I got some money from a grant, and I'm going to do this recording with Dennis Chambers. And I was like, I think I have to go and do this session, you know. I mean, you know, I mean, like, here's a guy who can pull Dennis Chambers on a session.
Oh, well,
you know,
look, and you're so funny. You are so amazing. You get buzz all the time because of what you do. You belong with Lafayette Gilchrist. You belong with Dennis Chambers and Carl Filippiak. So when you see all of this talent assembled on a stage, it's like, excuse me, where are we? I mean,
oh, yeah.
to see.
You know, some of us, I mean, you know, Carl and Dennis, I mean, not to say that they're that much older than Lafayette and I, but there was a time when we were like the cats on the scene trying to get the music down, and Carl and Dennis were already way, way established in their careers, you know? So
Yeah. It's
not like you're thinking like, oh yeah, someday I'm going to be like hanging out playing gigs with these guys. No, you're going to the show because you're like anybody else. You think these guys are awesome, and you're like, you're down with the music, and you're like, man, that was, I mean, I can remember seeing Carl and Dennis play together like 20 years ago and being in the audience and just cheering those guys on, you know, not thinking that, you know, eventually I'd be playing in groups with them or something like that. It's more or less, you know, you're just going and you're just, you know, hoping one day, oh yeah, you know, and then you want, I think I've been playing with Carl on and off for like the last 3 or 4 years in the various projects. I've sat in with his band, done gigs with his band. He's done things with our project, the Baltimore Jazz Education Project. He's been in Lafayette's band for more than 2 years, you know. And I have to mention, this past weekend was pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah. How'd it go?
It was really, really great. Friday night, we played the 10th anniversary of Station North, which was a great event on Charles and North Avenue, and it was in this parking garage in the top. And the governor came out, Governor O'Malley.
Yeah.
It was really a blast. And just, you know, there was a lot of hometown pride of what's going on in Baltimore. The arts are really exploding, you know, just, you know, Maryland Institute of Art, the revitalization of North Avenue, and there's so many great bands, the Wind Up Space Club and Joe Square, you know, and it's like, man, it's really happening. So that was Friday, and then Saturday we played at the Wind Up Space and had a great gig there, just, you know, just really very, very nice. And it was kind of almost just that weekend was almost like Baltimore was like a mini New York because there was so many things going on. And that's the kind of town Baltimore is now becoming. You know, you don't necessarily need to go to a big town to do something to be creative. You can be in a hometown, which I kind of like because,
my friendships and my relationships with people have deepened over the years. With some of these people, 30 years. I mean, John Diker, we've been playing in bands together since middle school.
Oh, gosh, isn't that wild? Woo!
Oh, it's great. It's absolutely, you can't ask for anything better than that, you know. So, being and playing with Lafayette for the last 10 years and Carl for the last couple, and just all the different relationships I've had with people, and teaching at Music and Arts for over 20 years, and, you know, having students going on and getting scholarships to places and whatnot. So, I mean, my career, but my life is also, it's very full in a good way.
And you know, this is so funny, Greg, that you're talking about this, because I just had a conversation earlier with a great guy that has become my friend. E.C. Coleman is what you see on Facebook, but he calls himself E.C., and he's one of these premier drummers that puts together these awesome bands, and he lives in Vegas. He's traveled all the way around the world. He was born in Italy. But what were we talking about earlier today? This is so funny. He said, Trish, I'm asking you this. I really want to play Baltimore. He just got off of this hugely successful two-night gig at Churchill in Atlanta, and he's high from that. He's looking forward to playing at Blues Alley again coming up in the next few months. But he said, while I'm in town or in the region, I really want to be able to play Baltimore. And honestly, Greg, I'm not sure if you know this or not, but this is exciting. You are naming some clubs. Tracy Hamlin just did a gig at McGoobie's in Timonium
uh-huh.
on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
It was
uh-huh.
sold out.
Wonderful.
First of all, yes. And secondly, the cool thing, besides the fact that she was phenomenal, this is another place now to consider, because Tracy is booking some shows into that venue. So you have this very cool staggered seating place where people are just gravitating. They've gravitated to comedy, but now they're gravitating to music and jazz. So, woo! This is another part of the hope that we're all experiencing in Baltimore, because it looks like things are coming back, honey.
Yeah, oh, most definitely. And I can tell you another thing, the young people are really bringing it.
Mm.
There's a whole crowd of them out there. Unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, there's a Tuesday night completely improvised session at the wind-up space called Out of Your Head. A lot of young people that are going to Peabody or Towson University, UMBC, they come out and they do this session. Then they form their own bands, go out and do their own gigs. I just heard Peter Formanak, Michael Formanak's son, on saxophone a couple weeks ago, and he sounded great. I'm like, you don't even need to go to music school. Just go out and do gigs. You sound awesome. Yeah, and he's not out of high school yet.
Oh, gosh, isn't that wild?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a whole slew of young people, and when you have that youthful energy where you're, you know, just working on it, you know, 24-7, getting the music together and, you know, putting together your CDs or whatever kind of projects they decide to do. That's a good thing, and it's in that area, that Station North area, but it's also spreading out all over the Baltimore, area. And you got stuff going on down in the Eastern Shore, too, you know. There's little jazz festivals down there, too.
Yeah, and isn't that wild? I didn't expect to see that, but I'm really tickled. And here's something else, you know, where you get to see some of these young cats come around. I've been there a couple of times, and I've been really impressed. Craig Alston has that jam the second Wednesday at UB Blake. And,
absolutely.
Man, these cats turn out for it, and I'm just so tickled, even though we need more audience people because everybody shows up to play, which is not bad. But, man, the enormity of the talent. I think, Greg, even people from New York and L.A. and Atlanta, well, obviously, because EC and I were talking about this today, but they're paying attention to this corridor because it's so strong. Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're really fortunate. And, you know, you can, it's easy to get in contact with people. Very easy.
Yeah.
You don't have to go through levels of management or anything like that. And, you know, a lot of bands are fairly easy to go see. It's great.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm so tickled that you're a part of this enormous and much needed Baltimore Jazz Education Project, because how many kids do you think have been affected by this since its implementation? How many students do you talk to back and forth about this kind of thing?
Well, I would say in the 5 years, it's been over 20 that we've worked with, probably closer to 30.
Cool.
We were at Winston Middle School for 2 years, and we formed a band, and we had about 10 kids in that band. And unfortunately, the city of Baltimore literally closed all the middle schools in 1 year, and they made all schools either middle to high school or elementary to middle. So Winston got closed, and now we're at Patterson Park Public Charter School, and we've been working with their band over there, and I guess, you know, they have 14 or 15 people in their band, maybe more than that. We've had a percussion ensemble that we've worked on, and then I've had about 4 or 5 private students that I've worked with over the years.
Mm. And let me ask you this, because I'm all about seeing young women step up. Are there any girls in this project?
We have, because of the Flat Five Quintet,
there's
two young ladies.
Wow.
That'll be
playing.
And yes, we certainly wanted to do more with that, no doubt. We have, over the school, which I don't go to the school on a regular basis. We have a young lady that works. Well, actually, we have Katie Kilroy, who's the instructor over at Patterson Park Charter School. So we hire her as a Towson State music student to go and teach through our program over at Patterson Park.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, women should be a big element in this whole thing. No doubt about it.
You know what? When I saw our friend Tiffany working on stage next to you with Lafayette and the family there, I was blown away, because this woman does roar on that saxophone. Tiffany DeVoe, or is it DeVoe?
DeVoe, yeah. And she was particularly awesome this past weekend.
Was she?
Really, really awesome. Yeah. That's one thing with Lafayette's band, is that people tend to – you can't be a shrinking violet. You have to step up.
Yes.
And she steps up, you know. So she was particularly great this past weekend, you know. And the thing is that most people get in this band and they start analyzing a little bit of what they're doing with their playing, and they may take it in a new direction, or they may practice more, you know. And I could certainly hear that with what Tiffany was doing this weekend. Yeah, she's a real strong player. And she's playing in other bands around Baltimore, too.
She's
so she's got, yeah. And
she's
a wonderful, smart person, too.
And she definitely has charisma. I don't know what it is about her, but if we could explain it, maybe somebody wouldn't have the charisma. So why bother trying to explain? She's just really a sexy, strong, attractive in a real woman sense, and she knows how to play that thing. And I see lately she's gotten a little bit more style in what she's doing. As far as the fashion is concerned, she's looking pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, Tiff definitely knows how to work it.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing, like, I mean, you know, anybody that hears Lafayette's band, I've always considered that it's kind of always been like this macho, masculine band, because it's very aggressive, you know? I mean, we do have slow pieces that we do play, more subtle, quiet pieces. Yes, we do. But generally, that band can slam, you know, it can sledgehammer you very quickly.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
So you got to be, you know, audience, but also the players have to be ready, you know. And, you know, Tiff came in and just did the job, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it
yeah.
wasn't even a matter of, you know, the, you know, male-female thing. She just came in as a musician and did what needed to be done, you know. And that,
right.
that's really the requirement. Can you come in and do what needs to be done? And I'll tell you, yeah, there's been guys that have come into this band that they didn't make it. They didn't make it.
Well, you know, here's the thing about Lafayette, and people who don't live in this area have to understand this. I have seen it for myself, and I understand what people are saying when they say this about him. Many have been touted as being the reincarnation of Thelonious Monk. But seriously, Lafayette is like Monk in a few different ways, including that personality that you cannot define. There's something that is a star quality about Lafayette, and you know, he's absolutely sane all the time. Couldn't say that about Monk, God bless his heart. But Lafayette seems to be coming from this place that's so serene, and he is able to just juggle people on stage. People seem to know what to do because he just emanates leadership. So when I say to folks, Lafayette Kilcrest is no joke, you all shine on stage when you're in that midst. So folks are going to get a real taste of international artistry when they step up to go to Towson State University on Saturday.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, we're going to have a
yeah.
good time.
You are. And hopefully I'll be there. It's a busy schedule, but we really want to make this again because we had such a great time last year. And I can't find the tune. I've got to open it up. So during the course of the 2 o'clock hour, Gregory, or on Thursday, I'm going to make sure, and you can even talk to Lafayette himself. If he wants to holler at me on Thursday, come on board and do a half an hour or whatever with me, he is perfectly welcome to do that because people need to know more about him too.
Absolutely. I'm going to see him in a few minutes.
Great.
So.
All right. You let him know, and I'm going to open up the phone lines for folks because this is First Tuesday. You've come at a good time because this is all about people calling to talk about their gigs and their new projects. Now we know about your gig coming up, and we'll make sure that we keep it on the event page every day until Saturday.
Well, thanks, Trish. I look forward to seeing you soon.
And me as well. Thanks for stopping in. I really appreciate what you're all about. God love you, Gregory Tompkins, really.
All right. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Yes, sir. We're just cooking with gas now, and I just want to make sure that folks know it's the Baltimore Jazz Education Project coming up on Saturday. And actually, Gregory has a website, Roland ParkJazz.com. He's on Facebook as well, but R-O-L-A-N-D, ParkJazz.com has more information. And I know, as soon as I said that, I know my friend Albert was going to give me a call. And here he is on the horn. This is First Tuesday. This hour is reserved for gigs and CDs. If you have one or the other, give me a call at 323-843-6172, 323-843-6172. I want to try to get to John Dukic, that was on with us last night on Cool Jazz Conversations. It's not a hard name. My son is named Tiernan Eugene Hennessy Flaherty, for the love of all that's good and holy. But John Dukic, for some reason, throws me off. His music doesn't, and you're going to hear a taste of that, as well as a birthday guy who's celebrating tomorrow. It's October, everybody! In less than 3 weeks, this gal turns 60. I don't care. Who knows? I'm going to celebrate, and maybe even doing the show, because it falls on a Tuesday. We'll have to talk about that. Albert Norwood II is on the line with me. Hi, hon. How are you?
What's up, Trish? How you doing, everybody?
Listen to you. You got your radio voice on today. Yay.
Oh, my God. Okay, that was funny, though. Actually, I got to say that. That was funny.
Yeah.
All right.
How are you? What's going on?
Basically, if it's okay to say this, because I'm gonna tell you again, I appreciate the fact that Hybrid Jazz, they're really opening the door for us as far as people hearing what we're about and everything for the Christian instrumentalists. Well, I do want to say that, if it's okay,
yeah,
that in a couple weeks from now, in fact, Sunday, October the 28th.
Uh-huh.
Those of you by your laptops that night around 8 o'clock, log in to livestream.com/thecolorjazz. The color jazz will be picking us up, and we'll be doing it. Color Jazz will be picking us up. On that show we'll be doing a live interview. I'm taking a head on this one. So what's going on is what I plan on doing. We'll be showcasing the music, including some of the other releases that we had prior to number three, which some of you have heard already. So we're gonna make sure that everybody kind of gets a real listen to some of the other projects that we have, and talk about some of our history. Also, my partner, Brother Stone, the Apostle Sheldon Grace of the UNI Ministries. I'll definitely be mentioning some of the things that he's been involved with. Because if it wasn't for him, there wouldn't be me.
Well,
so I definitely got to say that. But most of all, this is key. What I really plan on doing is simply that the music is simply, once again, a vehicle for the love of Jesus. And that's all I really want to share with this whole thing in a couple of weeks. So basically, I'm like this. For those of y'all that are Facebook neighbors with me on Facebook, Just go to the wall. You'll see some of the info. Those of you that got a Christian instrumentalist for a fan page, please go to the fan page. That'll give you the info as well. Further things down the line concerning the 28th, I'll definitely let you know as we go along. But I definitely wanted to make that announcement. Hey, y'all get your laptops, lock in. Let's do it.
You are a trip. Definitely. You know your girls, you know, Griselda and Yolanda and Poulevu, a.k.a. Debbie Poole, might be tuning in for that. So we'll help to spread the word. That's awesome. I'm so glad that folks are catching on. Shug, this is wonderful. Wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad. Well, since you told us about that, then I definitely think I should play Atmosphere, don't you think?
All right, well, hey, it's your show. It's your show. I'm not going to get in the way of that.
Well, that's great. And keep us posted again. Make sure you put little bookmarks in Facebook so we remember the date on that, okay?
Certainly will.
Okay, great. Albert Norwood II, ladies and gentlemen. And we're really looking forward to The Color of Jazz. And in case folks want to pick up now, after they hear Atmosphere, because you know as soon as I play this, people go, oh, what was that song you played? Where can they get a hold of this tunage, please?
You can go to CDBaby.com, and basically I give you the link, CDBaby.com/artist/Christian Instrumentalist. That's the artist page on CDBaby. Or what you can do, just to shorten it up, you can simply go to the Christian Instrumentalist band page on Facebook. You'll find the link to CD Baby right there to get to the music and preview whatever you want. And of course, you can get it.
Fabulous! Thank you so much, and I wish you the best. And you know that I do, because we're believers in you here in the chat room and beyond, Albert.
Hey, that means so much, y'all. Appreciate it.
You are so welcome. Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon, and we'll be tuning in that night. Yay!
All right, back to the keys.
Okay. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and these are the Christian Instrumentalists and Atmosphere. Check it out. Oh, my. That song just you just float away, and then it's raining here in Baltimore, so you just drift off and suddenly remember to turn your microphone on. The Christian Instrumentalists and Atmosphere. Isn't that nice? Thanks to Albert for stopping by and letting us know what's going on. We have a call from the 704 area code. Hello, who is this? Hello? Hello? I guess they didn't want to talk. I understand. It's all right. It gives me a reason then to play the song I was intending to play after that particular song you just heard. This is something that is on this Just Seamless new Foreplay CD, Esprit de Four. Now, you heard Harvey Mason with us a week or so ago. God. That was just so much fun, and he has been a doll because he made it a point to call the other guys in Foreplay to say, you need to be on with Trish. He's just a trip, and thanks to Muse for getting this all together. Harvey and the guys are on the Kaz cruise having a ball. If you've seen Harvey's pictures, they're amazing. I wanted to get to something that Chuck Loeb was responsible for on this Foreplay CD. This is amazing. It's called December Dream on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Can I get a Have Mercy? Yeah. I'll do my own Have Mercy. That was Tracy Hamlin, And that was a song, one of the songs that stopped the show the other day. She, Ms. Tracy, played at a place called Magoobies, where most of us were not familiar with the place. It's usually been a comedy place. And as a matter of fact, Stacey Carver, who was hysterical, opened up for Tracy, yes, the Tracy and Stacey show, and it was just so incredible. A packed house, it was indeed sold out. And there were guys in the band. One of the gentlemen I have not seen for a few years, he actually moved back from Arizona to Baltimore. David Wells, now known as David Mark, one of the great people on saxophone, no joke. And he and Tracy have not worked together much from what I understand, because being in front, and Debbie Poole can attest to this if she saw him do this a few times to Glenn Douglas on keys and then Walter Cosby playing bass, David Mark was so taken with Tracy, he just shook his head a couple of times. She is so riveting with her range, and she's been working with Gloria Gaynor in the past couple of years, and I don't know what has transpired with the communication back and forth between she and Gloria, but Tracy is just soaring now, and just amazing to see people respond to her. She had a lot of family there, a lot of friends, and it was just awesome. She did that song, and people lost their minds. It was really cool. That is a bonus track from Tracy's CD, Better Days, and I want you to get a hold of that if you can. There's Tracy Hamlin, HAMLALIN.com, that has more. Now, if you're going to be in the New York area, or if you want to be because of this, Tracy is going to be at the Metropolitan Room in New York City. And I'm checking on whether that's going to be Friday or Saturday, on Friday the 5th at 9:30. This is a very big deal, okay? And that way, if you go to New York, you can always come back and check out the fundraiser for the Baltimore Jazz Education Project, right? Just trying to help you out. But that's going to be really something else. And she's going to play with top-of-the-line players that night, just as she did the other night. And I just can't say enough. Just honored to be part of the whole scenario there. Thank you, Nat, Dr. Nat Landry, Tracy's wonderful husband, who doubles much of the time as her manager and gets the job done. Man, does he ever. We heard Foreplay 2, December Dream, from Esprit de Four, Chuck Loeb, one of his contributions to the album. And in each one, Chuck and Nathan East and Bob James and Harvey Mason, oh, Harvey, just contributed what they could, the best of what they could, and just can't say enough about it. Just as I can't say enough about the Rippingtons, Built to Last. Man, looking forward to this Thursday at Ram's Head in Annapolis. And I think that our friend EC is going to be coming with me, so hopefully Joy Hall will be there and a few folks that really are fans. And he is right. Russ Freeman, God bless him for spending a half an hour with us, when he says that it's one of the rooms that cooks, because people really appreciate you. If you ever get to this area, you will know what I'm talking about in Annapolis, Maryland. Man, it's hot. So is this tune from Roy Hargrove. I have to play Roy here because he's one of those folks that shares my birthday, October 16th. So I'm drawn to his music and this particular track anyway, because it's from a CD called Ear Food. How can you not love any song that comes from a CD called Ear Food, right? Right. And don't forget who's coming up at 3 o'clock today, Lynn Fidmont. You thought you heard all the stories? Wait till you hear about Lynn's musical journey. Got to meet her at Jazz and Pink when they were playing Burke's Jazz earlier in the year. Wanted to have her on the show. We worked it out. I am excited as all get out. If you go to her website and see what people are writing about her, or go to CD Baby and find out that the folks with the accolades, who they are, mind-blowing. We're going to get to a few Lynn tracks, but first we're going to get to Roy Hargrove and Star Maker from Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
Good time last night on Cool Jazz Conversations, that's for sure. John Dukic, Rio de Janeiro Blue, a song that's been covered by a few people. But John, it's just so interesting what he has done with Down in Brazil. Just added new flavor and new authenticity to the whole vibe of what we have come to know as this Brazilian music that just took us over in the 60s and really hasn't let up. So now John's breathed a new fire into it, and he was really a joy to interview last night. We're new friends on Facebook. Yay, John! You'll be hearing more tracks from John. We also heard Ronnie Laws, whose birthday it is tomorrow. Happy 62nd birthday, Ronnie. I know you don't care. You don't care. From his 1975 album, Pressure Sensitive, Always There. And I had to say thank you for always being there to Ronnie on his Facebook page, because, man, hasn't he been giving us some music through the years? That saxophone is on fire, as is that trumpet of Roy Hargrove, flugelhornist as well, if I can say that. From his album Ear Food, that was Star Maker. Roy's birthday is October 16th, and hopefully we'll be celebrating together. I don't know. I'm just saying that. Maybe he'll be on the show. I don't know who's going to be on the show. I want it to be somebody really special. We'll see. On the drums, so you know, Montez Coleman on that track, Danton Bowler on bass, Justin Robinson on alto sax and flute, Gerald Clayton on piano, and Roy doing his thing. Such a thing it is, and such a thing Lynn Fidmont has in her vocal cords. Amazing. How was I able to say to myself, I really wanted to hear Lynn a lot on the show? A few weeks ago, I heard George Duke from Dookie Treats, and this song just jumped out at me. And I heard Lynn in the background, and I want you to hear her. We're going to segue right into a Lynn Fidmont song, and then you're going to hear her during the 3 o'clock hour on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Are you ready? Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo!
I need my coat.
Where you going?
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I got to go away.
Baby, it's cold out there.
This evening has been
hoping that you
so
drop in.
Very nice.
I'll hold your hand. They're just
my
like
mother
ice.
Will start to
beautiful. What's
my
your
father
word?
Will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace.
Is it that scary?
Beautiful. Please don't
make
hurry.
It just a habit.
Why don't you
more?
Put some records on while
the neighbors
I
might think
baby is bad out there.
Say, what's in this drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight now. I'll take your hand. Your hand
to say no, no, no.
Mind
sir.
If I'm moving closer?
At least I'm gonna say that I
oh,
tried.
What's the sense of hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out.
Oh my goodness. Woo-hoo-hoo. Lynn Fidmott right there and Kevin Whalum. Baby, it's cold outside. And I just had Lynn on the phone and she disappeared. I think that was Lynn. I'm not quite sure. I think it was Lynn, but that's okay. She'll call back. I just wanted to make sure you knew about the kind of talent that we have on the line with us. Not only a formidable talent who is considered part of the first call and has been considered that way in L.A. and actually internationally for so long. People cannot say enough when they have worked with Lynn Fidmott. No less than Stevie Wonder made sure that everybody knew that he had her for a while. She belongs to you now. Didn't want to let her go, but she really does belong to the world. Just done a number of successful projects with every major player, it seems, in the universe. Has done a couple on her own, Flo and Lady. And this particular track is from a Christmas package that she put together that is just off the chain. Everything she does seems to be that way. I'm talking about the force that is Lynn Fidmott. Welcome to the show, Lynn.
Oh, wow. What an introduction. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Girl, listen, you are so respected. You got to know what kind of reputation you have. It is so gold. And you probably think about that sometimes and go, what the heck happened?
Yes, I do. I mean, I really don't hear what people say about me. And that's probably a good thing. I like that it's good, most of it, I think. And I am happy and blessed and just enjoying what I do immensely. You know, and that was me and Kevin Whalum. I don't know if you said that. As you know,
yes.
My hand dropped, right?
Yes, I wanted to really throw a curveball at folks because, that, you know, it's usually considered a Christmas song. But your voice and Kevin's, when you do things on your own, you are so amazing. And then when you get together with other people, it's like we entered into a private party there.
It felt like it. Kevin and I are very, very close friends, and we love singing together. I love his voice. And I love his whole family, the whole...
Yes.
It's a package deal, you know.
That's right.
So, it's a package deal. But,
and
thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm excited, and Russ was on earlier. He's an old friend, too.
Yes.
I don't know if he told you, but I did a lot of the Riffington's recordings early on.
Yes. Matter of fact, we talked a little bit before we got on the air, and I made it a point to make sure that he knew that you said hello, and he says hello back to you. He is just so excited, and it just seemed to make a lot of sense that it fell into place that both you and Russ were on the show today, because, shoo-wee, both of you are so doggone busy, Lynn.
Well, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. I the thing about music is, I got something from George Duke. He said, excellence is overrated. I mean, perfection is overrated, excuse me. But excellence, this is me speaking, I always seek excellence. But perfection is out of reach. So,
well, and
in the seeking, you find something pretty good, usually.
And George had a point. The underlying thing of what he didn't say there is that, you know, he always strives for the authenticity. He would rather have the ring of truth than
right.
go over and over it again. And you do that, too. You allow that vulnerability to come into your singing, and that's what's so endearing about you. Man, I was listening to All of Lady the other day, and I was just weeping because you poured everything into that. It was just so sweet to hear the clarity and the truth in that, Lynn.
It would do Billie Holiday a disservice, because if anybody ever did that, she did that.
I know.
Her voice was just like a pain kind of bell. So I had to do her some justice. The thing I like to do is record something, work on my vocal, on my, you know, get my comp, get my final vocal, and walk around the house and see if I can ignore it. If I can go around the house and ignore it, then I feel like I've done something good. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I like it to be kind of a passive friend. As you sit there, the music is kind of a passive friend that just keeps you company.
You know, that's kind of a good thing, because if you were obsessing about it, you would know that something more needed to be done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that comes from a place of serenity. And actually, the truth of the matter is that if you're going to tackle a project like this, when you've paid tribute to Billie Holiday, as you did on Lady, that means that you have a strong place of confidence where you're coming from. And that wasn't necessarily always the case with you, because even early on, people were saying to you, oh, my God, Lynn, you're so gifted. And you went, really?
And still, I don't think I'm not the kind of singer that gets it right, like perfect the first time. I know what it, I'm like a cook that knows what it should taste like. You know, you may not get it right the first time, but I know what it should taste like.
Interesting.
You know, my mother's, my mother's macaroni and cheese. It took me a while to get it, like, you know, perfect, but I knew when I was wrong. I know when I'm wrong. That's the thing.
Well, and it's amazing that you have these St. Louis roots that kind of dictated where your path was going to be. I want to know about Doris Fraser and the Fidmont Singers.
Well, Doris Fraser is my aunt and my father's sister. She's a ball of energy, and she can take any room and take it to an uproar. She can make you do things you don't even think you can do. She's a firecracker, and she was really, I guess, my first example of, I never even thought I could sing. She sings with, you know, she sings great, and she always did, and I never even dreamed that I would, like, come close to anything like her. But still, if I did a show, in St. Louis, and I invited her up to sing, and she got the whole thing, she took the whole thing to a new level.
Did she?
She got up and started directing the choir. Well, I said the choir, but the whole audience. It was an 800 theater, and everybody was singing under her direction. Me included. My friend told me what to do. Okay, I guess. She's a born leader, born choir director, and a great performer, great singer, and piano player.
Well,
so they have
and
records. You know, they did. I watched them do their own CDs, and I guess that was probably the beginning of figuring out that you can do it yourself too. You know, you can do it on an independent and dictate your own path, which is what I enjoy doing.
Well, she must have been a formidable influence on you, because we're talking about a gospel group. So, you know, I'm just imagining the strength of her character, and you just made sure you cemented that image in my head.
I submit. She's great, and she's fun. She's really just fun. People have fun with her. And that's something I enjoy, too. I got that from her, and I got that from early days with Stevie Wonder. I realized Stevie's just up here having a good time.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's having a good time, and I realized if you don't have fun, other people won't have fun. And that kind of released me from the pressure of the perfection thing, because going to Berkeley, you know, you learn all these things, and you learn two fives, you learn how to modulate and be musically sound, which is important. But then the balancing of throwing fun in there is what makes it great, I think. The balancing of having knowledge and having a certain expertise, and then the fun, that's the music. That's the magic of the music, I think.
And you said something that is profound, because in essence what you're saying is you're very conscious of the audience. They've come there for a good time, and if they're not seeing you have a good time, they're not feeling good.
Right. Even Miles Davis was having a good time in his own weird way, you know.
Yes.
He was doing his thing. He was, you know, in his element, and you were in that mysterious world right along with him, you know. So it's a fun thing. I love loving what I do. I'm so fortunate to love what I do.
Oh my gosh! And you really have had some kind of scenario. I read about you, Lynn, and I am amazed at your work ethic, because from what I understand, the first situation that maybe was that moment for you where you decided to go on this path was when you saw Stephanie Mills in The Wiz. You were about 15?
I was 15, and she completely blew my mind. I didn't know someone's voice could soar and touch me that way.
Wow.
And she has a different kind of voice than I do. But she's a fantastic performer. She made me feel something. And I realized it's about feeling stuff.
Yes. Yes.
You know, it's all about the feeling stuff, making people feel things.
And I love this because you came back from that show, and then there was a play. You auditioned for the play. You got the lead in Our Town, and somewhere along the line, a teacher asked you if you could sing, and you went, I don't know.
That was The Wiz, and I did Our Town. That had no singing.
Right.
And then we did The Wiz, I think, the next year. I just was talking. I think in my bio you saw that I acted a little bit, and then I started doing the thing. I didn't even know I could sing. I was interested in the theater program, you know. But she said, can you sing? And it was Home, actually, the song that became my little signature song for quite a while.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
And I said, I don't know. I'll try it. And I did it, and I got a standing ovation. And that's the moment I said, I kind of like this game. I love this game. You know, and then I went on to school and studied public relations. I didn't study music. My mom kind of had guided me in that direction, which I'm glad she did.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's a great
while,
situation, yes.
Yeah, all the while I was singing in a band. Every night, 4 or 5 nights a week, I was singing in a band in Boston. So I don't know how I graduated, but I somehow managed to do it. And I didn't work study, I just did music. And that's where I developed a certain sound. I did all Donna Summer. I did all the top popular songs. I did Please Release Me. I did a variety of music in it. And somewhere in there, I found something that sounds like me.
Yeah.
And stopped
yeah.
copying every little nuance and started developing it, you know.
And then, gosh, I admire this so much. You've gone to school, and you've learned public relations, and now you're finding at that particular juncture you can't find work right away. So you're singing in the Boston Commons, and here comes this Berkeley professor, and what does he say to you?
He asked me if I wanted a scholarship.
Wow.
And he actually gave me his card and said, maybe we'll do some gigs. I said, okay, that's good. Some would call what I was doing panhandling because I would sing in the Boston Commons at lunch. And that was the only job I had. It paid my rent. I played with a guitarist named Bill Banfield. And we used to go downtown, sing at lunch, and just live the rest of the time on that little money, which was enough. But he called me and asked me if I wanted to go a scholarship to go to Berkeley. At the time, I had just graduated. And I think he woke me up. And I woke up and said, no, I don't want to go anymore. I don't want to do school anymore. And when I woke up that day, I realized what I had done. And I called him back and he said, I do want to go. So he offered, you know, the scholarship and went to Berkeley for a while and got a great deal of information that's valuable. I can't put a value on it. It's so.
That's right, yeah.
Makes a big difference in my life right now. Yeah.
Yep. Because my gosh, you talk about fleshing out what you already knew. You were singing everything and
everything. Yeah,
and then
everything.
You learned jazz, and then
I
God.
I have to tell you who that professor was because he just passed, and I just want to say his name. His name, believe it or not, was Orville Wright. And some of us who went to Berkeley around the time I did, and before me, knew him and really loved him. He made a big difference in a lot of people's lives. So, Orville Wright, believe it or not. I said, really? Your name is Orville Wright? I said, right, brother? And yes, it was true.
How about that? And you know what? That's ironic, Lynn, because the theater professor that I had at Temple University made all the difference in the world for me, as far as guiding me, and he just passed as well.
Hmm.
Yeah. there's just, I don't know, there's something unusual happening in the atmosphere right now. It just seems like people are bonding. There are people that are passing that meant a lot, and then other people remain that are bonding even more than we had.
It's true. I just got back yesterday from my niece's funeral. My
really?
Niece was 13.
Oh, my gosh.
Kiana Janae Jackson. She is my ex-husband, Wayne Lindsay, fantastic keyboard player, his sister's daughter. But, you know, my niece just the same.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, we all bonded. It was a really... It's funny you say that because we bonded and everybody bonded. His fiance, you know, everybody kind of forgot anything that was crazy and dumb and just moved forward and had a great time celebrating her life, you know.
Bless her heart.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear that. So sorry.
Yeah, she was ahead of her time. She was way ahead of her time. She did business plans. She researched every kind of college entrance exam. She was just, you know, she was, some people are ahead of their time. Like Carl Anderson is another one who flew through this life quickly, but he was a brilliant, shining light, you know.
Yes.
So sometimes it's like that. Some of us have to work it out a little longer.
You know what? That is the truth, isn't it? It takes some of us late in life to learn some things.
Yeah.
And, you know, some,
and we don't
some of
know
these...
what it is.
Right,
we don't
right.
know. We don't know our purpose. I just pray that my purpose is served, you know. I just want to be a service. That's another thing about music. I want it to serve in some way, you know. I think it's... There's so many aspects to music, and there's so many things about not having the biggest, the strongest, the best voice or the best something, but your motive should be, just my motive should be, is what I should say, to serve in some global way, some way that I can't even see. So that's another. You know, that's all heavy and groovy, but that's true.
And you know what? I've come to know George Duke a little bit, and what you just said is why he loves you. you have such a humble spirit because you say this, and folks who are brilliant in what they do, like you, gravitate to you because if folks don't know, I mean, you have worked with Barbara Streisand, Nancy Wilson, Whitney Houston, Joe Sample,
what?
And Crusaders.
Yeah.
I
that
mean,
was my first gig, my very first gig. I saw Wilson Sample not too long ago, and I hadn't seen him. I don't know if I had seen him since then. And I said, "You remember me?" He said, "Of course I remember you." I was so green then. He said, "Well, you're not green now." But I was. I was so green and scared. But it was such a fun thing, and everybody was nice to me. Nobody made me feel like, "What are you doing here?" You're not ready for the Jazz Crusaders. And I wasn't, but I was happy to be there.
Oh, look. Joe Sample was just on the show the other day. He spent an hour with me. Oh, my God, Lynn. It's like he didn't want to leave. He was talking up a storm. Probably his wife at this point doesn't want to hear any more stories.
He's the one who tells stories, and Bill Withers tells great stories. Bill was my second gig ever. And so I have two great storytellers right in a row. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Oh my gosh, Bill Withers, and Joe. I mean, he pretty much he didn't even see you. I mean, wasn't it one of those situations where he agreed? Look, I want her. I don't even have to meet with her.
Joe Valenti, yes. Oh, which one are you talking about?
Joe Sample.
Yes, Joe Sample heard a tape. I sent a tape, And so they picked it for, I was so shocked. I almost wanted to say no because I didn't think they were going to pick me. I sent them a tape. It was a cassette tape way back, you know, back then you didn't have CDs or things, you know. So, or even computers. It was crazy, but sent them a tape. And they picked me, and I was like, oh, my God. What am I going to do? Randy Crawford is so great. And she still is great. I just saw her not too long ago with Joe Sample. And so stepping into those shoes, I probably didn't even know what kind of shoes I was stepping into. You know, now I know even better, even more, how great she really is. But
well,
yeah, so actually Joe Zawinul, I worked with Joe Zawinul.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
And after I left Stevie for a while to do Joe Zawinul, and what a crazy, great experience that was. It was funny because I found out I was pregnant the first week of rehearsal. The very first week of rehearsal, we would take a break and eat, and I would continue to eat. But everybody else was done. I'm like, why am I taking thirds? Why do I feel like I'm so hungry? And I found out that week, and I went to him and said, you know what, Joe, I think you might have to let me go because I just found out that I am pregnant. He looked at me, he said, what better thing to show than life?
Oh.
Yeah.
That's and something.
That was an amazing moment for me, and the whole tour was great. My son is now 23 years old.
Oh, my.
And my daughter is 17. She's a senior in high school, but she's doing music as well.
That's
and
phenomenal.
My son has a CD out called Kingdom Influence, and it's funny because I was talking to a DJ on the online one day, and he asked me what I was up to. I told him I was doing a packaging of Christmas records. And he said, so what else is going on? And I mentioned, you know, I always mention my kids. And I said the name of his CD, and he knew exactly who my son, whose name is Courtney, but he goes by Son Bold Love. It's a gospel CD. He knew exactly who he was and said one of the songs on his CD was going to be featured that week.
Oh, isn't that something?
I freaked out. I'm meeting people and they shake my hand. They say, oh, I'm such a fan. And I think they're going to say, of yours. But they say, I'm such a fan of your son. And so that's really...
That's awesome.
It's an awesome feeling. I feel so proud of them. And, you know, life is good. Life is good, even when it's not so great. But it's what it is. And I'm enjoying every moment. Zumba is my happy hour and my social life, kind of.
Is it?
Zumba is... That's the reason I picked this time. I have to say, nobody messes with my Zumba.
That is so funny. And, you know, I've been persuaded to get involved in that for a while. When did you start to get involved in Zumba?
I started in January, and really it makes me happy. I call it I'm going to happy hour because you feel like you're at a party. You dance, the music is good, it's Latin, and, you know, you move on things you didn't use, you know, you don't move all the time.
Oh, God knows. Yes.
I think I'm learning about myself through Zumba, but it's a funny thing, really. The flexibility is amazing for your mind. When I started moving my spine differently than normal, you know, your regular walking kind of action, sit in the car, maybe do a little something. My mind kind of expanded, or it seemed like I had a more open way of thinking. So that's a benefit that you don't hear too much from Zumba, but really I think that is true. When you kind of move your spine and open it, it opens a pathway that is really a nice benefit.
And you know, that's really important because how many times have you heard people, and I'm guilty of this too, because when folks get into a discussion about exercise, invariably somebody will say, well, I don't have time to exercise.
Right.
And then they find out that when they make the time, suddenly they have the time for everything because their energy has increased a hundredfold.
Increased. It's amazing. I have a little platform. You know, my record label name is Midlife Records. So
I love it.
You know, I am an advocate to live your life to the fullest. And life doesn't end at 20. And in some ways, it really just begins in your middle ages, because you learn, you know, the kids, like all the other kids before them. And did you hear that? That's my alarm.
Oh, no.
Anyway, you know, you think that certain age, once you reach 50, oh, my God, that's old. But then you figure out that you can determine your outlook is a matter of your mind, your mindset.
Yes.
And it's so nice to figure that out. As a kid, you think 50 is old, 60 is, oh, my God, 70. But you see these people from examples, and you say, wait a minute. that's not necessarily true.
Oh, my gosh, no. And you know, there is another school of thought that says, well, you don't want to broadcast your age,
right?
Because you know, that's just not done. But honestly, Lynn, I really love to do it. I've learned to embrace it. There was a gal that was on Facebook, and she's a friend, and she was talking about feeling a little challenged because she met a younger man, and he was indicating that he was curious about her age, and she felt conflicted. I said, don't you dare feel conflicted. You have earned every dimple, every crease in your flesh.
Everyone. Not that we like the dimple.
Right.
But
you know what? It's you.
Yeah, that's true. The dimples, I mean, as far as the exercise, that's the thing. I love the results of exercise. That's basically what I'm saying.
Yep. And God, that's the key to longevity. I mean, we need to be good examples for kids, because look at the obesity in this country. Ooh.
I know. And getting older, like Jamie Foxx says, like fine wine, you just get more and more better.
That's right.
You know, it's true in some very, very important ways, you know. Of course, I miss being able to do some things that I used to be able to do, but if you stay active, you do pretty good, actually. It's not impossible to stay flexible and fit.
Well, let me tell you something, Lynn Fidmon. I saw you with Jazz in Pink the earlier part of the year, and you look like you were about 19, okay?
Well, thank you. I don't know. You know, I have a youthful spirit. I do. I like to do things that make me feel ageless. I used to play on a women's soccer team.
Oh,
and you know, and I love that. I love feeling, like I said, ageless, like a kid. However old a kid feels.
Well, you've got something about you. It's really neat. There is a smile that comes from inside of you, and then it shows on your face.
Oh, thank you.
It's like a whole smiley thing happening when people see you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Fortunate. I had a great time at the Berks Jazz Festival. That was fun. That was my first time doing that festival.
Oh, my gosh. And what
and
all of you.
Think. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's so crazy.
That's another thing. You know, it's so nice to see women being better than proficient on their instruments.
Yep.
And just stepping out of the box, out of the what people assume you should be like, or you know what you're capable of. I don't like those restrictions. That applies to age and sex and race and all the isms. I don't like any of those. So.
Gotcha. Understood completely. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's really cool that Gail, you know, she, God bless Gail Johnson. She she feels
she's a hard-working woman.
No, she ever.
She works harder than anyone I know. Really, I say that to her. I said, "Girl, you need to rest a little." She's like, "No rest for the weary."
Man,
she's going. She does.
She
keeps going.
She's something else, and displaying leadership, which is just crucial for women, especially involved in jazz, for sure.
Exactly.
You know. Woo! And let's please play something from Lynn Fidmott right now. And do you know what I want to play really a lot? There's a couple of songs I have here from Lady. I love the way you do All the Way.
Ah, me too. Not me too, but I love that whole thing. I love the feeling of that. I do love that.
Yes, you can.
I can say that. I love it.
This is so awesome. This is our guest, Lynn Fidmott, and from a couple of years ago, Lady, and it's all about the love directed to Billie Holiday. This is All the Way on Hyper Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
When
To that girl. Woo! We are getting some serious thumbs up in our chat room, Lynn. Everybody is tripping over themselves. Oh my God.
Good, good, good. Of course, that was Gerald Albright on saxophone. Got to give props.
Absolutely.
I was so fortunate to have some great musicians on that record. And in the spirit of Christmas, too, I got Russell Ferrante, Oscar Seaton. I got some great people on that. Of course, Kevin Whalum. And I can't think for Everett Harp.
Oh!
Yeah.
He is something else. And see, that's the beauty of you. I've been laughing in anticipation of this interview because I'm thinking to myself, you know, Lynn has worked with, or she has been invited to work with, so many people in the business, and they were more.
It is amazing. It does. It amazes me. It really does. It really does. I was going through the one name artist that I've worked with. I said, I wonder how, who are the one name, you know, like Madonna, Diana,
Donna,
Stevie, Michael. I was just kind of going through them, and I'm forgetting a lot of them because I can't remember. I mean, it's just too many people. So the one that I didn't work with that I'm still waiting for is Sting.
Oh, guess what? And it's his birthday today.
Ah, see? Maybe that's
how. How about that? Oh, my God. You and he would be amazing together.
I would absolutely love that. I would love that so much.
I just got a chill, honestly. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm holding out.
Well,
holding out
you just
then, you know, I've sung
focus.
With Aretha, I've sung with Steel. You know, I was kind of going through those names, those one-name people.
You were, and it's I want folks to know because I really do respect Ricky Minor so much, and he was instrumental with you, wasn't he?
He was. He's like a brother to me. We're like silly buddies.
Oh.
And we always were, but you know, in his beginning, in his career kind of ascent, we worked together all the time. I mean, the first BET special I did with him, we did millions of TV shows, millions of things. He's a valuable friend. He's somebody who, aside from the work, because we don't work as much together, they've got the Tonight Show band and they're pretty steady. But aside from the work, he's one of my best friends.
That's nice.
If we
That's
never
so
work
nice.
Together again, he's still one of my best friends.
Amazing.
So that's a good thing.
Oh, gosh. Is it ever? And how was it that you got together with Stevie? How did Stevie get to know about you and what you could do?
Well, Stevie, I was at a, when I first moved to L.A., I was doing a gig with a lady named Lynn Roderick, who was part of a group, By All Means, is the name of the group that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And two Lynns in the band. We were singing at a club called At My Place. It was a popular club in L.A. I don't know if you know about it.
No.
All the Marie sisters, Carl Anderson, Michael, oh, I can't think of his name now. But, you know, it was a hot spot. The phone rang, and they said, Lynn telephone. We were at Soundcheck. And so I went. We took a gamble. I just took a phone. The person on the phone said, Stevie Wonder is having an audition tonight. So
whoa.
I said, you're not talking to me. I'll give the message to Lynn, but would it be okay if I come too? And, you know, I don't know if that's okay, but I was, at that time, it was do or die kind of thing, you know, for a lot
right.
of time, you know. And Lynn and I were friends. She didn't mind. And we went, and it was, I think we showed up at about 11 o'clock. Stevie showed up at about 1 o'clock in the morning, played the piano for about 2 hours. Somebody went around and said, you sing top, you sing middle, you sing bottom. And when they pointed to me, they said, you sing top. I was like, top? I don't sing top. This is a waste of time. So, three people would go up, he'd teach you something, and then three people would go down. That went on for a couple of hours. And I guess I got to sing somewhere around 3:30.
Whoa.
It was like a cattle call. And my first cattle call, probably my last one too, actually, if I think about it. But when I sang, we did actually the song Love Is on Fire. It's on his last record, but that was in 1985, 86. So he had written that way back then.
Yeah.
I never heard, you know, he teaches you this stuff to see how fast you learn. So we did it, and he called somebody over, Keith John, the singer that sings with him now, and asked Keith to ask me if I knew Saving All My Love for You by Whitney Houston.
Oh,
all
wow.
night, he had not done that. The whole night was up, three down, three up, three down. I was thinking, oh, my God, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sleepy. This is a waste of time. But when I got to sing, I guess he heard a tone in my voice that is similar to the other singers. I even can hear it. It's similar to Denise Williams, to the, you know, the Minnie Riperton, to, of course, his wife, Sarita.
Sarita, yeah.
And Sarita. And so that tone, I guess he heard in me. He asked me to sing the song, and I said, oh, I don't really know it, but I'm gonna do it. That was my mindset. I was a little more daring than it seems. When I think about it, I say, oh, it's crazy, because I didn't even know the song, really. But Keith fed me the words, and I sang it. And so he called me back, and he kept calling me back. And I kept thinking, oh, God, I'm auditioning again. Oh, my God, I'm tired of auditioning. But every time he called me back, he told me later that he was fitting voices with mine.
Wow.
So I had the gig already. I didn't know I had the gig already. And it's funny because when I went to the audition, I'm kind of a nervous, like I cut my hair when I'm nervous.
You cut
it's
your hair?
It's the weirdest thing. I cut my hair when I'm nervous. So... Once, you guys, the first audition, my hair was pretty long. The second audition, my hair was short on one side. I had an asymmetrical cut. The next audition, I had both sides were up. Well, at the time I started on tour with Stevie, I had a little bitty pixie short haircut. And that is a true story.
That man just made you stress out.
That's my hair. Yeah.
Oh, Lord, that's funny. Oh, my God. So
that was funny. I had no idea. Had I known that I had the gig already, I'd probably say the same. But people who know me, they know I cut my hair when the stress was going on.
And you know, the beauty of this, I love that story, because apparently you were like the only one chosen from that
night. I was the only one chosen that night. I was the only one chosen that night.
And how remarkable. It's just, I mean, Stevie is just so, I mean, his senses are so developed, and he hears past what anybody else could hear given their sight, because he doesn't depend on that.
Yep. It's like the what the voice is based on, I guess.
Yes.
Not
yes.
That. Yeah, kind of.
But even they,
even more, yeah.
They know that they will see.
Right.
With Stevie, there's no hopes of seeing, so he's got to rely on the other things that have kicked into full gear, and that's why he's just a breathtaking genius, because it's a visionary with no sight. It's just awesome.
No sight. That's well said, and I never quite heard it that way, but that is exactly right. That's it. Yeah.
Wow, you really. And I got to be familiar with you all over again, because I got fully immersed about a month ago in Dookie Treats. And
Dookie Treats. Yeah.
Yes. And had an occasion to talk to George a little bit after a Stanley Clark, George Duke event in Wolf Trap, Virginia, and he was waxing poetic about all the folks that were on that album.
Oh, he's such a sweet person.
He is such
a great, oh my God, what a great musician.
He
is flowing with creativity, overflowing, oh my God. I'm still in awe of George Duke. He doesn't even know. I'm still starstruck. I can't even sing around George Duke right.
Because
I'm serious. I'm so serious. Something about, I grew up, my brother's a musician. Great. He's a saxophonist. He's on my records. You've heard him.
Yes.
So he played George Duke, Miles Davis, John Coltrane, all the stuff that was kind of ahead of me. I was kind of into Michael Jackson and the Supremes and, you know, a little bit of pop music. But I was always exposed to the deeper kind of Eddie Harris, all the little jazz stuff that I would never listen to or be exposed to. And George came to St. Louis and played a concert, and I went. Sheila E. played the Kunas. I thought that was so cool. Lynn Davis was singing. Who I love.
Yes.
And, they just made such an impression. In Dugu, I can't forget Dugu was part of the Crusaders.
Oh, yes.
Gig that I did as a teen. And he was also with George Duke. And that night I met Dugu and talked to Dugu, had the longest, nicest conversation with Dugu. And then I passed cross several times again, and he's a special person in life, too. He's a person who kind of directed me toward people that would maybe help me or be compatible with me. And we're still friends to this day. He has a yearly dinner that I always make, and I love him a lot.
Wow.
George Duke had me so in awe, and I think he's so talented. He can do anything. He never makes a mistake, ever. So I just think he's so fantastic. I kind of have to work through that still. When I start singing, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of, I know he hears me not being so great. You know, I feel like that. But he still calls me sometimes, and I'm really happy about that. He doesn't know all that. I still tell him, I'm still just a fan and really like a big fan. I have stage fright with him. For somebody, not everybody, but him. And actually, I had stage fright with Marcus Miller, too, I have to say.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I had stage fright. Marcus sits in the room with you when you record. So I felt him right there with me, and I was kind of like, I'm used to being in here by myself. I'm not used to somebody being right next to me. So that took some getting used to, too. Those two, really. Stevie is easy to record for. He's the epitome of taking you like you are, kind of taking you as you are and making the best of it. That's great.
Yeah, he just strikes me as being the kind of person that you know, he gets to the meat and potatoes of the subject matter right away because there's not a whole lot of time to waste, you know?
He doesn't take time doing it. He just doesn't even – I have a different outlook on all that. He just takes it and makes it great somehow. Somehow it works out.
Some people are like that. That is amazing.
Like that. Yeah.
And Lynn, you know what? This is so tough because our hour is almost up, and I know. Isn't that crazy?
I can't believe it. It really has been nice.
It really has been, and I promise you, the next show I'm going to do, I wanted to play a track just so folks know. I am so drawn to Lynn's album Flow. There is a song called "You Are Loved" that hit me right between the eyes.
You are not alone. That's one of those songs.
Whoa! Oh, my God. So we'll play it next time. And I am just tickled that you had to spend, and I appreciate you so much. I really do.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I'm going to be on the Capitol Jazz Cruise coming up, and hope to see somebody that heard this show on there. And if you're there, let me know that you heard the show. I'd like to talk to you.
That's awesome. And I'll make sure that folks know that the archive is going to be available like within the next hour or so. So I'll post it to your page.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lynn.
I
had a great time talking to you, and God bless you. We'll be looking for you down the road, and wherever you're going to be, I'll be there.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's so wonderful. We've got less than 60 seconds to tell you. Thank you so much for your support. We'll see you hopefully on Thursday. We've got this power situation happening in the neighborhood, so we've got to keep our ear to the grindstone to figure out what's going on. But this is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. It's been a blessing to have had Russ Freeman and Gregory Tompkins and Lynn Fidmont. Thank you so much. And for your support, I'm forever grateful. Talk to you later.